Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has two causes on its oral submission docket. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Anthony T. Arena versus the City of Tyler from Smith County, and Carl Collum and others versus the City of Abilene from Taylor County. In each of these causes, we have allotted 15 minutes for each side to submit oral argument, and the petitioners may reserve a certain portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of our court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of these two causes. We are recording your arguments for the convenience of the court. If you desire to listen to a tape of the arguments, you may make application with our clerk. Court is now ready to hear from petitioner in T. Arena versus City of Tyler.
May it please the court, petitioner will be represented by Mr. David Weiner. Petitioner has reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm David Weiner, counsel for the petitioner Anthony T. Arena. In Kierstead versus City of San Antonio, this court said that any kind of official work assignment with respect to a non-firefighting employee that does not include firefighting and exceeds the regular 40-hour work week is compensable as overtime. That, we submit, is the principle that should inform the analysis of the issue that was before the court, which is whether Anthony T. Arena is entitled to overtime compensation for the time that he was on call beyond his regular 40-hour work week. The statutes that were in effect at the relevant time in this case clearly specify that he was entitled to be paid for the time, as we have set forth here in the charge, that he was required to remain available for immediate call to duty by continuously remaining in contact with a fire department office by telephone or radio. Article 1269C, Section 6, provides that that time is to be included in the hours of the non-firefighting employee's work week. A clear and simple construction of the statute should require the court to find that the time that a non-firefighting employee is on call and subject to being immediately called to duty by continuously remaining in contact by telephone or radio is time for which he should be compensated.
For what purpose does the statute require a municipality to compute the hours in a work week? It says in computing the hours in the work week of a firefighter, that's how this starts off. Is there a reason why?
Well, the previous paragraphs or subsections of the statute state that the non-firefighting employees shall not be required to work more than the average work week of employees of the municipality who are not fire department employees. So the next section provides that computing the hours of that work week, these hours that a non-firefighting employee is on call are to be included in the work week. If on-call duty is not an official work assignment, the question is, what is it? It has to be an official work assignment. Now, in Spainhauer, the Dallas Court of Appeals seemed briefly to make a distinction between official work assignments and official assignments in an effort to reach the conclusion that that this section of the statute does not require compensation for non-firefighting employees for their on-call time. But we believe that if there's an official assignment for an employee, that it has to be an official work assignment. This statute, and this section of the statute says, speaks of this time that a non-firefighting employee is required to remain available for immediate call by continuously remaining in contact. It is a requirement The summary judgment evidence in this case clearly shows that petitioner was required to remain available for immediate call to duty.
When you say required, he was allowed to go about whatever affairs he wanted to as long as he was reachable.
Yes.
Go eat, go play tennis, go sleep, go to the movies, go do anything he wanted to as long as he was available by beeper.
By beeper or pager or by telephone, and certainly within reach to where he could immediately respond to a call should there be one.
How many hours a week did an average investigator stay in contact?
Well, I don't know about the average investigator, but summary judgment evidence in this case shows that at various times the petitioner was required to be on 24-hour on-call duty, and that at other times he was required to be on call for an entire week at a time during the hours other than the hours that he was actually at the fire station.
So if we're talking about 168 hours in a week and he's at the station 20 hours, say, then you would have 20 more hours of regular pay and then 128 hours of overtime compensation rate. Is that?
Yeah, you mean 128 and the regular 40?
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, whatever it might come out to for any particular week's assignment is what would be.
Which means the investigator is the highest paid person within the fire department.
Well, not necessarily.
Or anybody falling within this.
Not necessarily.
Firefighting scheme.
It could be other types of in non-firefighting employees. Now, the city's argument is to some extent that that an investigator would be making more than the fire chief and other fire department employees. But as far as I can read the statute, even the fire chief could be subject to on-call duty, for which he would be could be compensated.
The only person who cannot do this is going to be somebody who actually lives at the station and fights the fires.
I'm sorry?
The person who puts the fires out is obviously expressly excluded from this.
Well, they're not because the statute also in other sections the statute provides that that firefighters and other employees. I'm sorry. This statute says that firefighters or other members of the fire department. So this actually does include firefighters.
At some point it reads the other way, but
Well, I put up the 1985 version. Now there is a sub issue in this case with respect to the version in effect before 1985 that basically said in computing the hours in the work week of firemen subject to the preceding paragraph.
That's the 1959 version.
Yes.
Then there's the 1985 version. And if the 1987 version were in effect, it would be clear that Mr. Tiarena could not be compensated as you believe he should.
That's right. I don't think we would be here because we wouldn't have an argument.
Of course, the majority of the Spainhauer court thought that the statute, if construed as you urged, was referred to as being foolish and absurd.
Yes.
And if the statute is deficient in some way, the legislature is a place that can be changed and did change the statute.
Exactly. Well, we believe that what the legislature did in the 1987 version was to change the statute, not to clarify the earlier version of the statute. The Spainhauer decision basically, and all the arguments made by the city that rely upon the 1987 version are to the effect that the 1985 version or the pre-1987 version do not mean what they say. They mean what the 1987 version says. And we don't have any support in this case from legislative history or otherwise to overcome the presumption that the 1987 version was a change in the law, not just a clarification. There's no express statement of intent to clarify and no other indication. So under familiar rules of statutory construction, the court should be compelled to find that the 1987 version was a change, that the law was different before that time.
Can you suggest a reason why they changed it?
It could very well be, well, what the 1987 version did was, of course, to expressly incorporate the Fair Labor Standards Act requirements and limitations upon payment for on-call time. And apparently the legislature decided to adopt that standard and make it applicable to Texas.
Why? Why not keep the 85 standard?
There's no specific reason. Of course, you're asking for any ideas that I might have.
Or in the history. Anything at all.
Well, I'm not aware of it in the history, but one point about the history that should be noted is that, as Justice Doggett said, the pre-1985 version was adopted in 1959 in this state. And at that time, the Fair Labor Standards Act interpretation of on-call time had already been not to count time that an employee could be subject to call to duty by remaining in contact by radio or telephone, that a person had to be so on the premises or so close to the premises that he couldn't effectively use the time for his own purposes. So it's clear that at the time that the Texas statute was initially enacted, that the legislature chose not to follow the federal standard. At some later time, in 1987, some 28 years later, a decision apparently was made to bring Texas law into line with the federal standard.
Well, if that's the case, why? Why didn't they just keep it the same way?
It doesn't cost cities as much if the federal standard is.
But it never did.
Well, the question is whether the legislature intended that employees such as petitioners should be compensated. They weren't being paid, but of course we say that they should have been paid under the clear language of the statute.
But there's no explanation for why they changed their minds in 1987, except they just did.
As far as I'm aware, that it just read on its face there was a change in of policy and a decision to adopt the federal standard. Now I correct myself when I say that it hadn't been that the Texas standard had not been interpreted to require. Obviously, we have these decisions from the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals, the Harrison case and the Salazar case, which gave effect to what we believe is the clear language of the statute.
There's nothing in this statute, is there, in any of the three versions that requires a city to keep someone on call?
Not that I'm aware.
A concern that a fire investigator might be paid more by being paid for on call than the fire chief. The city has the power to control that by how long they keep someone on call.
Precisely. To come back to what I believe is the key here, and that is that if you go back to Kierstead, which said that any kind of official work assignment in excess of the 40-hour work week is compensable as overtime, and then you read these statutes, there's no question but that the time spent on call and subject to immediate call is compensable as overtime.
Councilman, in either the 85 or 87 version of the statute, and in close language of the 59 statute, the section beneath this one, this is C, the section beneath it is D, that says if you're required to work more than the maximum number of hours, you'll get overtime at time and a half. Is work, the word work then is never used in C. They talk about work week and computing the time of the work week. Is there ever any definitional section in Article 1269 that defines work?
Not that not that I'm aware of, and I think that it's left for this court to give clear effect to the fact that the statute speaks of using and computing these hours in determining the work week. If in the work week, there's a reason for it, and the reason is that it is to be counted as time for which an employee should be compensated.
So your argument comes down to the, I guess, a logical assertion that it would be foolish to say that the hours in the work week are not times for which you should be deemed considered working.
That's correct. And if anything, the 1987 amendment that changes the law and excludes this time is proof that prior to that time, prior to the 1987 version, this time was to be counted in the work week as compensable time for which an employee should be paid.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, respondent is represented by Ms. Sharon Fisher.
May it please the court. My name is Sharon Fisher, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Tyler. The petitioner has told you today that Article 1259P, Section 6, authorizes him to overtime wages for every hour he spent off duty but on call while employed as a fire inspector for the City of Tyler. He claims the statute is clear and unambiguous, and that on a straightforward reading of the statute, that the city is required to pay him for every hour that he did one of a couple of things. He either carried a beeper, carried a pager or a radio, or left a telephone number at the fire department.
All at the request of the city.
Yes, sir. But otherwise, by his own uncontroverted testimony that was presented as summary judgment evidence, was able to use that time for his own benefit.
Counsel, what does it say?
The statute requires that certain mandates be met before an employee, whether it be a firefighting employee or a non-firefighting employee, can include on-call hours as hours worked. The statute nowhere authorizes cities in Texas to pay any employee for time not spent working. So what does
that language say?
The language says that work are hours that are spent available for immediate recall and in continuous contact should be included in the work week.
Immediate recall would indicate to me that he's on call, that he is not on the job.
Yes, sir.
That he's doing something else, but that
yes,
he is on call subject to immediate recall to the job. And he's entitled to compensation for periods of time in which he's in that status. That's what that seems to say in very
Tell
me how to read it otherwise.
Okay, the city's argument here is that there is no definition of what being available for immediate call to duty is or what continuous contact means, and that the courts must determine at what point on-call status rises to the level of meeting these statutory mandates.
Is there any doubt that he was available for immediate call by beeper the entire time?
Yes, sir, Justice Doggett. This particular employee was a fire investigator or a fire inspector, and by the very duties of that job, when they are called to a fire scene, their primary duties will not even begin until a fire is put out.
Well, there's
testimony on record that this individual had to arrive at a fire scene within a reasonable time. There was never a requirement for immediate arrival at the scene, and you need to compare this employee's mandate under on-call status to that of a firefighter or an emergency medical technician.
I understand he didn't have to run red lights to get there, but if you beeped, was he responsible, according to the record, to respond?
Yes, sir.
Within a reasonable period of time?
Yes, sir, Your Honor, but that is not what the statute mandates as far as justifying overtime compensation.
Okay, if you say it mandates immediate and because he could respond in a reasonable period of time, that doesn't satisfy the statutory requirement.
That's correct, and we presented his own testimony at trial that at no time during his on-call duty was he expected to immediately arrive at a scene, and there is testimony in the record that the typical arrival time was never stipulated when he was recalled, and that he could be at a fire scene within 20 minutes to an hour and a half, and that it just depended on the circumstances, where he was, and what kind of a fire scene they were dealing with.
As far as the second and final part of the statute, that he remained continuously remaining in contact, there's no doubt in this record that that was met.
Yes, sir. We developed facts at trial during our summary judgment hearing that continuous contact was not required. He was required merely to be accessible, and that the idea or the statutory language of continuous contact requires the employee to show that his time is so interfered with or his regular life activities are impaired to the extent that that status itself rises to the level of a work assignment. As the Kierstead...
Doesn't that compel us to go far beyond the clear purport of that language? It seems to me that we have to engage in some fairly extreme linguistic gymnastics to get where you want to go.
Justice Gamage, I believe that these are fact situations. The city does not stand before this court today to say that never is there an on-call status that rises to the level of a work assignment. That in this particular case, with this particular petitioner, the facts show that he was never required to be available for immediate call of duty, nor was he ever in continuous contact
what
with the fire department.
What would it take to satisfy those requirements by your interpretation?
There is some court guidance in the Federal Circuit, a long line of Fifth Circuit cases over about the last 20 years that has followed the precedent set down by the United States Supreme Court in an early case, the 1944 case, Skidmore versus Swift. And those federal courts, Fifth Circuit cases, almost uniformly tell litigants and people in these situations that they must show that they were not able to use that time effectively for their own purpose. If they are required during on-call to be doing something primarily for the benefit of the employer, rather than enjoying their regular life activities, then that on-call status should be considered a work assignment.
Counsel, did I understand you to say just now, though, that he was the facts showed that he was never continuously in contact?
Not according to the way that continuous contact should be interpreted in terms of when overtime wages should be paid.
How should it be interpreted as being in contact by telephone or radio or deeper? But the facts show that he never was continuously in contact by telephone or radio. Is that what you said?
What we have argued throughout this case is that the requirement of continuous contact must turn on whether or not he was standing and waiting, which is a developed area in
Texas. Is that what Article 1269 says?
Well, it is ambiguous. There is no definition of what continuous contact is required in the statute, and that's why we asked the trial court in arguing that summary judgment to first recognize that there were certain ambiguities in pre-1987 versions of this statute, which are the statutes at issue, and that courts must apply some reasonable interpretation of when overtime wages are going to be justified and when on-call duty is going to equal work hours.
Counsel, was he free to go to Dallas or Fort Worth during that period of time?
There's facts on record, his own uncontroverted testimony at the summary judgment hearing, that he was able to be within a certain geographic region of the city of Tyler.
Was his time his own? Was he free to?
If he
was
wanted,
he free to go over to Rayburn Lake and do a little fishing,
if he wanted
or go down
to go
Dallas
to
then go out on the boat?
If he had vacation plans set, or he wanted to go to Dallas during a weekend that he was on call, there was flexibility in this department where he could switch his on call status.
That's not what I'm asking. When he is on call, is he on your time or is he on his own time? Is he free to do whatever he wants to do, or does he have constraints on him that limit his movement, that require him to let you know where he is going to be so that he can be reached by telephone at any time, or otherwise carry a beeper on him or some other device for communication? Or is he free to fly down there, or drive down to Galveston, go out on a boat and go deep sea fishing, or maybe go up to New Mexico and visit some friends? Or is he a free agent, or is he on your time?
He's on his own call. He's on his own time. and he needs to be accessible to the fire department. And the facts were,
if he's got that beeper and he's in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico deep sea fishing, he's not much good.
That would not be a reasonable response time. There were certain geographical restrictions. He needed to be able to arrive at a fire scene, and the record shows this, within about an hour and a half. So certainly there were certain geographic restrictions on him during his on-call hours. But again, the city has argued that restriction in and of itself does not rise the status up to the level of work contemplated by this statute in terms of paying employees overtime wages for hours worked in excess of the 40-hour work week.
We have certain constraints on this when it comes to construing statutory language. If it's clear and it's unequivocal, then we're compelled to apply it as it is written. If it is vague and ambiguous, then we give it a reasonable construction. If it is clear and unequivocal, the rule of reason doesn't even come into play. And if the legislature enacted an unreasonable statute, we're still compelled to enforce that policy, whether we like it or not, whether we think it's rational or not. If they enact it, we do it unless it's vague and ambiguous and we can give it a reasonable construction. I know we're trying to inject some ambiguity here, but I'm having a hard time wrestling with it.
Well, there is no definition of what is available for immediate call to duty, and the facts show in this record that this petitioner was never required to be available for immediate call to duty. So one of the statutory mandates simply was not met. And this case is different from the... Yes, sir.
Immediate call to duty. What was he required to do?
He was required to arrive at a fire scene to perform fire inspection duties within a reasonable time. There was never an arrival time stipulated at any time when he was recalled. He simply had to be at the fire scene within a reasonable period of time. Now, this case and this summary judgment case is different from the City of Victoria case. In that case, that was also a summary judgment case. The petitioner has relied on that case to support, and that case supports the City of Tyler. What the Court of Appeals decided in remanding that case is they said that the city's arguments were valid, and the city's arguments were that these non-firefighting personnel were not in continuous contact and were not available for immediate recall. But the record was unclear to the Court of Appeals on whether or not the facts actually established that these employees were able to use that time effectively for their own purposes. And that case was remanded so that that court could make that further determination. And what the appeals court said there is that these employees are due overtime wages if they can otherwise show that these statutory requirements are met. We have a full record on this case. There are no fact issues left to be resolved here. Tony Tiarena's own testimony was used as the city's summary judgment evidence that during these on-call hours, he spent his time as he would have otherwise spent it had he been off duty and not on call. He went bowling.
He could paint his house, but he couldn't paint his beach house.
That's true, Justice Gamage. You're right about that. But he was able to go bowling. He was able to go to the park, go to church services. He is asking this court to say that per se, 1269P, somewhere in this language says that by his wearing a beeper or leaving a telephone number with the fire department, that somehow that in and of itself rises to the level of work as contemplated by the statute in requiring cities in Texas to pay overtime wages for any hours worked over that statutory work week or that maximum work week.
If that is not a reasonable interpretation of why the legislature changed it, it might stop. Why they go to trouble?
Well, one reason that they did it is because the United States Supreme Court in 1985, in the case of Garcia versus San Antonio Transit Authority, extended coverage of the Fair Labor Standards Act to cities and to municipal employees. So the protections of FLSA, while the states had an opportunity to adopt them before 85, they really didn't have a choice after that. They needed to make sure that whatever provisions modified terms of the FLSA were incorporated into their state statutes, which is what the legislature did in 87.
How many fire inspectors did the city of Tyler have during this period of time?
There were different numbers at different times.
There was more than one.
Yes, sir. There were at least four or five at the point in time when Mr. Tiarena became a fire inspector.
As a practical matter, did the city rotate this on-call time among their various...
Yes, sir. There were different periods of time in how they handled that on-call. There was a certain period of time when they had one inspector on for a week, and then he was off. And then there was another period of time where they had teams of inspectors on call. And then there was another period of time where they would be on call every other day or just for the weekend. So it depended on what point in time you're looking at. But there was always flexibility built into the schedule.
But the point is the city made that decision.
Yes, sir.
In each instance.
Yes, sir.
And during this period of time, was any other fire inspector besides Officer Tiarina on call?
Yes, sir. Every fire inspector had certain on-call hours assigned to him.
During this particular period of time?
Yes, sir.
How many?
It depends on what period of time you're talking about, because this is almost a three-year period of time. At any given period of time, there were at least three inspectors.
I believe what Justice Baldy's asking is when Tiarina was on call, the very hours that he was on call, were there other inspectors also on call?
During certain periods of time, during, I think it was August of 84 through August of 85, they worked in teams. So
you know,
at any given time,
there were other periods of time in which Officer Tiarina was the only fire inspector on call.
Yes, sir. They had provisions there that if, thank you.
Were the inspectors salaried or hourly employees?
They were salaried employees and worked a regular 40-hour work week.
So they were 40-hour salaried employees?
Yes, sir.
But now, on contemplated overtime, was there a set wage for their overtime?
In the first year that is relevant to this litigation, if they were recalled during certain periods of their off-duty on-call time, then they got compensatory time off. And then the policy shifted then that they had a choice then whether to use compensatory time or to be paid overtime wages.
Were there in the regulations of the department a clear definition of what became overtime and what was compensable overtime?
I'm not aware that there was a written policy, but I am aware that whenever an inspector was recalled to duty, when he was off duty but on call, he was paid overtime wages in the form of compensatory time off for time and a half or actual wages at time and a half.
But there was no hourly compensation set for overtime for inspectors?
I'm sure there was, at whatever their salary was divided by a 40-hour work week.
Are there any other cases like this in the pipeline?
I think there's a case that Mr. Deeks told me that he's got a case in the pipeline right now that's got similar fact issues out of the city of Lubbock. The only case that's factually on point in Texas is the City of Dallas versus Spain Hour case.
Let me ask you a question. Did I understand you to say that there are no facts to be litigated in this case?
Yes,
law,
sir.
It's a matter of law?
Yes, sir.
If we were to disagree with you and agree with the petitioner's construction of the statute, we could render the case for Mr. Tiarina, and the amounts are in the record. What do you do under this interpretation of the petitioner? Or does the trial court...
If this court disagreed with the city's position, I don't think there's adequate evidence on record to properly have this court determine damages. I think it would need to be remanded.
So the hours have not been stipulated by the city?
I believe they're in the record somewhere, but I don't know that it was very developed at the summary judgment hearing, so I'm not sure how clear the transcript is on that.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel, do you have a copy of the 1985 statute in front of you? It's on
yes, I do.
Page A, Appendix 4 of your brief.
Yes.
Could you look at Section D, which is a section that nobody's talked about yet, to my knowledge? This says that a firefighter or other member of the fire department, which is the phraseology that they were using in the 1985 statute, who is required in an emergency to work more hours in the week than is authorized under A and D, which is the complicated form that we talked about, is entitled to be paid overtime without regard to the number of hours worked in any one week of the work cycle. Does that mean... I guess I'm trying to understand what does that mean. If this inspector is at home and he's only on call 30 hours a week, but he gets called, he still gets overtime?
I cannot provide an answer to the question with any real certainty, but I could suggest that what that provision applies to and what it means is that a firefighter or other member of the fire department could be required to remain at work, and it could be and would have to obviously be compensated for any time that they remain at work under those circumstances, an emergency or otherwise. Actually, in Section E is similar, but is not limited to emergency. Beyond that, I would certainly say that I don't see any conflict between that and Section C, which we believe is the key to the case.
That took your time. But somebody might have a question. They might want to say.
With regard to the disposition of this case, does it not, even should you prevail, need to be remanded to the trial court?
It does, because we don't have a motion for summary judgment on file, and there are fact questions remaining, at the very least, with respect to the amount of overtime for which Mr. Tiedewein is entitled to be.
If he had an hour or so to get to the scene, how can it be said that he's available for immediate call?
I think that can be set in the context of how I understand the city's argument on the question of immediate, which is the city would have the court believe and adopt a firefighter standard for a non-firefighting employee, saying that immediate only applies to firefighters who are there at the station and who have to be able to respond within 3 or 4 minutes. Our answer to that is immediate simply depends upon the circumstances. Certainly, there's summary judgment evidence to show here that if he was called to duty during his on-call time, Mr. Tiarena certainly had to immediately prepare to go to the scene. And what's reasonable is whether he was within 10 minutes of the scene or within 20 minutes of the scene if he happened to be with his family. But immediate certainly is that he'd have to drop what he was doing, as he testified he would have to, and take all steps to go to the scene immediately within a reasonable time. And the same thing goes for continuous, actually, in that the city, to the extent that they have an argument on it, seems to suggest that continuous is what is being on the scene. But the whole point of the statute, of course, is that it applies to employees who are away from the premises at the time that they are called to duty. So
if you were in the bowling alley or in a movie or out at Tyler Lake fishing, the beeper went off, you'd have to head for shore pretty quickly.
He was in continuous contact at that point, and he had to immediately respond and go to the scene. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court will take a brief recess.
The audience, please rise.